Oye, oye, the United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Joseph L. Toth presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near and you will be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good afternoon. I'm Judge Toth, and I'm joined by Judge Falvey to my right and Judge Lauer to my left. We are convened today to consider arguments in the matter of Jacqueline Roberson versus Douglas A. Collins, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 24-5809. Will counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, please enter your appearance for the record?
Lila Kanowski and Matthew Peterson for Jacqueline Roberson.
Okay, and would you like to reserve time for rebuttal?
Yes, please, 10 minutes.
Okay, great, thanks, welcome. Sorry, I cut you off there.
Kristen Dowell on behalf of the Secretary, and which is Deputy Chief Counsel Lori Jamison.
Great, welcome. Okay, counsel ready? We'll begin with appellant's counsel.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. The issue in this case is whether a remand is required for the board to address whether the 1151 claims can be construed to include a secondary service connection claim. At the outset, unlike in Bonds, the board did not address this at all, and the secretary does not dispute that this was raised by appellant, including her March 2022 statement in response to the veteran's heart issue being related to use of cocaine. The veteran had been self-medicating his PTSD before his heart conditions, and by the May 2022 VA examiner, who opined that his drug abuse caused the heart and ulcer condition and said that his PTSD made him prone to drug abuse. Even in Bonds during the oral argument, the secretary conceded that there are some cases where review of the facts would be needed to determine whether the 1151 claim can include an 1110 claim. At a minimum, this case requires the board to respond to appellant's raised argument, address the VA opinions in that context, and make findings as to the scope of the claim. But if the court wants to resolve as a matter of law whether an 1151 claim can ever include an 1110 claim, then the answer should be yes. Let's start with Anderson v. Principi and the court's.
Before we get into the legal, I want to ask, so what's the status of the PTSD claim?
We made an argument that we need a Manling Con remand because there was an NOD that never received an SOC in 2004. I think you should ask the secretary because I believe the notice of errata may have conceded that error. That would be my understanding. I think that might be an appropriate question for the secretary.
Okay.
What impact, if at all, does it make that the 1151 claim has not been appealed to the court? In other words, the first issue that the court's being asked to decide about the service connection, secondary service connection, what impact, if any, does the fact that the appellant has not appealed the decision that the board made regarding the 1151 claim?
We did not appeal the theory of entitlement under 1151. So that would be, I guess, a theory that is being abandoned in front of the court. We are not contending that the board erred in denying the entitlement under 1151. We're contending that the board's error was not reviewing the evidence that clearly raised entitlement to secondary service connection via the PTSD and cocaine. That is the theory of entitlement that we would like the remand on, not on the 11.
Is no impact whatsoever on the theory of the service connection, secondary service connection as a result of abandoning the 1151 claim.
The 1151 theory of entitlement, I don't believe that would impact it because our argument would be that the scope of the claim would include the development that happened during the claim. And in this case, the VA opinions that were obtained for the 1151 claim actually pointed to entitlement under a secondary service connection theory, which is what expanded, the claim to include the secondary service connection theory of entitlement. But we did abandon the theory of entitlement under 1151.
And we cut you off. As you know, the panel ordered be prepared to discuss Anderson.
Yes.
And so if I may get you back on that course.
Sure. Okay, so in Anderson, the court had language. There is a legal distinction between filing a claim for service connection pursuant to 1151 and a claim for compensation derived from, pursuant to 1110 and a claim for compensation derived from 1151. What I want to emphasize is that it's a 2004 case. It came out before Schroeder, Comer, Ingram, Clemens, and Alessio. And that language was part of a formalist approach in determining the scope of a claim, which was repudiated by the Federal Circuit in Comer and by this court in Ingram. Moreover, the language about the distinction between 1151 and 1110 under the particular facts of Anderson, that wasn't really the reason why the court didn't remand the depression claim. What happened was during the briefing, the board had granted 1151 compensation for impotence. And during the briefing to the court, the veteran said the board erred because medical records showed that my depression is secondary to the impotence, so the board should have addressed that. And the court gave a few reasons for why it didn't agree. First of all, the court had already issued an earlier order in August 2002 remanding a psychiatric claim, a service connection psychiatric claim for VCAA notice. So they said, you've already got a psychiatric claim that's already being processed and we remanded it. Second, they said the board couldn't err in failing to address this depression claim because you never raised that theory of entitlement before the board. You raised it for the first time before this court. So there's no board error if the board never knew of the theory of entitlement. Then it said two interesting things. It said, anyway, you can't raise a theory of entitlement of secondary service connection from an 1151 disability until the 1151 compensation is granted. So you couldn't even raise that theory until this board decision, which granted 1151 compensation for impotence. And then it made that statement about the legal distinction and said, this remanded claim, the psychiatric claim service connection that we already remanded, is legally distinct from the 1151 claim. Now, that was 2004, and that is not how we understand the law today. The law today, a person can file an 1151 claim and file a claim for other conditions claimed as secondary to the 1151 condition and doesn't have to wait until they're granted compensation to even make the contention that it's secondary. Instead, those claims would be inextricably intertwined, and after you adjudicate the 1151 entitlement, then you would look at whether these other conditions are secondary to it. So that's the first thing. And second, you know, again, the legal distinction language, that was from a time of a much more formalist approach, which is not how the law is understood today.
I mean, you're covering a lot of ground here. So I want to keep you on what you just said. So right now, you can file a claim for an 1151, and then you can file for conditions that are secondary to the injury that you received because of the malpractice.
Yeah, you could file it at the same time, and you would want to file it at the same time to preserve your effective date. You wouldn't want to wait until the 1151 claim is granted to argue secondary that something is secondary to it. Instead, the secondary claims would simply be inextricably intertwined, so the court, VA, would adjudicate the 1151 entitlement first. If it's granted, then they would look at whether these other conditions are secondary and either grant or deny them. But you would want to file for all of the, you know, secondary issues.
As I see, I'm looking at 3.310 right now, which is, you know, disabilities that are proximately due to or aggravated by service-connected diseases or injury. And so that regulation's been read to allow for secondary conditions that are not related to a primary in-service incident, but to an act of medical negligence on VA's part.
I believe that secondary service connection, 1151 says, the way that 1151 has been understood is that we treat that condition as if it's service-connected. So from my understanding and my experience, I believe that secondary
service connection. It's not merely for complications involved. I mean, that might be a slightly different thing, right? You would get the – how do I say? So a person could be injured because of – at a VA facility, and it could cause injury A, and that when it turns out the full scope of that injury is given up, that could kind of also incorporate maybe condition B and C, but those are still all the result. They're directly caused by an 1151 disability.
Yes.
But you're saying that there is a regular practice of seeing an 1151 claim causing disability A, which itself causes disability B, which is not caused directly by the 1151, and that's granted.
I've seen entitlement under that theory. I don't believe that the way I believe that the way VA deals with these things is once the 1151 claim is granted, they essentially treat that condition the same as a service-connected condition. And at that point, if there are other conditions that arise as a result of it, they would adjudicate that like a secondary service connection claim. Although I take your point that it's not technically the same thing, but I believe that they process and treat them as secondary service connection claims once the 1151 claim is granted.
Okay, thank you.
So, but just to go back to the appellant's theory here, the secondary service connection is based on the service connection and rating for PTSD.
Yes.
And then the argument is self-medicating with cocaine for the veteran here, which then gets you to the injuries that are noted in the medical record, the record of evidence of heart condition and the ulcers. Is that, am I tracking?
Sort of. I would make the note that this is not, it's already been decided by VA that the veteran's drug abuse is a part of his PTSD and can't be separated out. That was already decided in 2013. I believe a VA examiner said that. So it's not a question of whether the drug abuse is part of his PTSD condition. That's already been decided. But so the theory is that his PTSD condition, which includes the drug abuse, is what caused the heart and ulcer conditions. That is the theory.
And so the secretary's, I'm sorry, the secretary's is arguing that the passage of time during the development under the 1151 claim makes a difference here.
I would like to talk about the oral arguments and bonds as well as your concurrence, Judge Toth, because I thought it was an interesting way to frame the issue, which is that, you know, we talk about scope of the claim a lot, but there are different cases that really are talking about different things. There's how we do we liberally construe the pleading document, and then what happens while the claim is being developed. And they're both kind of called scope of the claim, but there is that distinction. And here, our argument is not that the pleading document raised this theory. Our argument is that as it developed, as VA obtained their own opinions, as the appellant got more involved and saw that the opinions that VA was obtaining, the appellant herself raised, okay, you're saying it's because of cocaine. The cocaine is because of the PTSD. And then we have a VA examiner very explicitly saying in the same opinion, this is because of the drug abuse, and he was prone to drug abuse for his PTSD. So at that point, which was around 2022, is when the scope of the claim expanded because of the development that occurred. And that development showed the entitlement to benefits for this condition based on a different theory than what the veteran had initially hypothesized in 2011.
I want to ask, so following on that, so your point is this, these two pages here, this statement in support of the claim that he filed, because this would have been regarded as the pleading, right? This statement in support of claim that he files in November of 2011. And the idea is that this here does not plead a service connection claim.
No. One thing I did notice when I was reviewing this yesterday, although it wasn't in our briefing, so this may be abandoned, is actually he got a letter in November 2011 saying that the previous direct service connection claim was not final, and 5 days later he submitted that statement. So maybe one could argue that that was putting another theory on that already direct service connection claim of 1151, but we didn't argue that in our briefing. So to the extent that the November 2011 1151 informal claim is the pleading document, no, it did not allude to direct service connection. He talked about VA medical treatment, I believe.
Just quickly, if we assume that the NOD is still pending, I know this is the first question I asked you.
Yes.
For the PTSD. I mean, couldn't you pursue the secondary heart condition, pursue the heart condition as secondary to the PTSD if that's still pending?
No, I don't believe that. Maybe, I guess, no, I don't see how that would work because the PTSD claim, I believe, arose from 2003, and he was already service-connected from February 2011. So our Manlincon argument is that the grant, which I believe happened in 2013, was because of a liberalizing law. So it is distinct from the NOD that he filed in 2004. Had it not been a liberalizing law, we couldn't make the argument because he would have had to have disputed the effective date with that rating decision that granted service connection for PTSD. But we argue that because it was a liberalizing law, the earlier claim is still not final because the earlier claim wouldn't have been based on the liberalizing, I think it was 3.304F something. That
I mean, what if he prevails on his appeal? What if VA, right, he challenged it in an NOD, and as far as we know, that NOD hasn't been adjudicated yet. What if he prevails?
I mean, no. So here's why I don't think that would work, is that the period of time, if he prevailed, well, it's the appellant now as a substitute. If she prevailed on the PTSD claim, the period of time that would now be service-connected for PTSD would, I believe, be from 2003 to February of 2011. But from February 2011, he was already service-connected for PTSD. And this claim of the 1151 benefits wasn't raised until November 2011. So I don't see how there could be the argument that before he even mentioned, you know, this is because of VA medical treatment, before he even raised, you know, before there was even this claim stream raising the secondary theory of entitlement, that that could somehow tie back to this pending PTSD issue when the period that would be at issue there would be from 2003 to February 2011.
Before you get going again, and please slow it down.
Okay? I'm sorry.
You're losing me. But am I correct in understanding that you're arguing that your 1151 claim from November 2011 was expanded along the way to include service connection claim?
Secondary service connection, yes.
Okay. So if a claim consists of all theories that pertain to the same benefit for the same disability, then isn't there a problem? Because this is not the same, this is not a different, just a different theory for the same benefit for the same disability, because this is different benefits. That one is benefits for service under service connection, the other is benefit under 1151. And again, looking at Anderson, and I don't think this, despite, you know, the moving away from formalistic notions of veterans law and all that is aside, I don't think this is an untrue statement. So here's what Anderson says. Unlike theories of service connection, sections 1110 and 1151 don't reach the same end of obtaining benefits for service-connected disabilities. A claim under each provision constitutes a separate and distinct claim for VA benefits. So it's they're different claims. So how can one expand to include the other?
I think the way that this should be viewed is from the perspective of a pro se veteran who is not competent to know the etiology of his condition. So the claim for benefits, I do not think it includes the theory of entitlement. A claim is a request for compensation for a medical condition where the veteran is really only competent to report symptoms. Everything else is hypothesizing. So I think that to say that a veteran has to understand the legal distinction between 1151 and 1110 is to put is to make the rules overly technical, where VA is supposed to be assisting the veteran in developing the claim as a non-adversarial adjudicator. So I don't agree that there would be a problem just because they're distinct statutes. Yes.
So I understand, you know, if you read Clemens and Grimes and to some extent Ingram and even Shea and Sellers, I mean, they're dealing with how to construe language in a pleading, right? And Shea and Sellers, you know, what happens if you attach medical records and you refer to them in a pleading, et cetera, et cetera. And I understand, you know, whereas Delisio and Bailey and some of our other are dealing with how do you develop, what is VA's duty when they've given claim A or claim B to develop that claim to the full extent? And if I understand your argument today is that we're on that side of the fence. So I want to direct you to the regulation then, that it's 3.155D2, so all the way at the bottom of the reg. And it's basically where VA's reg lays out the scope of a claim. And if you go all the way to the bottom two sentences of that, it says, VA's decision on an issue within a claim implies that VA has determined that the evidence of record does not support entitlement for any other issues that are reasonably within the scope of the issues addressed in that decision. VA's decision that addresses all outstanding issues enumerated in the complete claim implies that VA has determined evidence of record does not support entitlement to any other issues that are reasonably within the scope of the issues enumerated in the complete claim. So that's a lot of language.
That's a lot of language.
What that means, though, is basically if the scope of a claim could be deemed to include every potential theory of everything, just the denial of claim A would impliedly deny the entire landscape of that would include that scope. And under Hamel, I mean, even providing notice that we declined claim A would give notice that maybe also, oh, there was an 1151 claim in there we also denied, and there was this that we also denied. So expanding the scope to include, I mean, broadly, I mean, it could have some negative consequences for veterans and, who did not intend to apply for a claim, and they didn't believe they were applying for a claim, and VA is regarding it as having been, somewhere implicit in there and having been denied. Are you following me on this?
I think I'm following you. I think that there's a difference between granting a claim and denying a benefit. All veterans want their claims granted. So I think that when you have a situation where the evidence of record absolutely, shows, hey, this person, we have a VA medical opinion saying this is because of his PTSD, even though he filed for 1151, I think that, granting it for service connection, I don't see how that would in any way be something that could harm the veteran to do that. I think that that would be, 3.103A, granting every benefit that could be supported in law while protecting the interests of the government. With respect to the worry that there might be an implicit denial.
But the idea I'm just trying to kind of work to scale this out to mm-hmm. future cases and how this might sort of iterate. Ideas where, VA would look at a claim and say, we denied that. Because that would have been included in the scope of that. So even though we didn't address it, because I mean, that language, if you look at the regulation, is about these sort of kind of implicit determinations.
Well, if VA did, I think there's two ways I can answer that. One, if we're going to say that VA implicitly denied it, then in this case, we would need the remand for the board to address whether that was correct because it was raised. So if there was an implicit denial of this theory of entitlement, then the board should have addressed it because it was raised. The board didn't even mention her March 2022 statement, the May 2022 VA exam, or the February 2024 VA exam. So I think we would need a remand on that.
We'd need a panel to do that?
To remand the case?
Do what you just said.
I don't think we would need a panel for a Robinson remand. Initially our briefing, that's what we asked for, was a Robinson remand because the board just didn't address the race contention. And we noted Bonds, but we noted that in Bonds, the board addressed the race contention. Here, it didn't even do that.
At the beginning, you said that the secretary conceded that it was raised.
I believe the secretary's brief said that appellant points to statements in the record that raised this theory, but the defense was that they weren't in the claim stating documents. And our argument on reply was, the board doesn't only have to respond to raised things in the claim stating documents. It's got to respond to anything raised while the claim is processing. That was, I believe, the holding in Wilson as well, that the board cannot ignore a claimant's contentions. The only way that I see, I mean, the only thing I could see, as far as the board not responding to it would be that if this court were to hold that there is an impenetrable barrier, then perhaps you could say it's harmless error. Because the board, even if it responded to it, it couldn't have done differently. But that is not what we think.
In this case, and I'm just trying to, again, work this through. Obviously, people go for medical help with an 1151. I mean, they're there getting treatment for some reason. And normally, the causality is really just focused on, did VA's treatment cause a bunch of downstream issues? Why would they have to go look into what brought the person to the hospital? I mean, is that really within the scope of a claim?
I understand what you're saying. I think that there's a worry that if we say that an 1151 claim could be expanded to include direct or secondary service connection, it's going to put an undue burden on the secretary. But I would say that the court already has made a standard of what reasonably raised means. In Robinson, the court said reasonably raised doesn't mean every possible theory of entitlement.
Right, but we're not legislators. I mean, we... like a lot of the Ingram in those early cases were because there was an informal claims regime where any communication to VA could technically be a claim. And then, you know, so the court through a number of decisions was really trying to understand what does it mean to read something sympathetically? Can the same sentence give an 1151 claim and a service connection claim? Can it, you know, just a number of different things. Since 2015, I mean, VA now has more of a formal regime. So at least there's like a claims form and we're dealing with language. But once we flip over, I mean, 3.155 begins with basically once VA has received a completed claim. And now it's on the duty of the secretary to develop and what they have to adjudicate and what the board has to count and the reasons and bases. So, I mean, this is going to scale to every single case. In terms of what the it's and it's not just a court like, oh, we said here once in a certain context that this reasonably is an issue. I mean, it has to be tethered to the actual regulations of the secretary.
I don't think it would scale. It would do that, though, because our contention is that reasonably raised means the same in any type of claim. The claim is the request for compensation for a medical condition. Now, if the claimant says this happened because of VA medical practice, you get your medical opinions and they say no. That's the end of the story. You don't have to go further than that. But whereas here, the VA medical opinions say it's because of the PTSD, that's what makes it reasonably raised, and that's what tethers it to the claim.
But so take, I forget, to share Sellers. I forget which one is.
Yeah.
So they both, I think it was Sellers, where, you know, a person states, I want everything in my medical records, right?
Yes.
Right. And the Federal Circuit said, no, you need some limiting principle.
Absolutely.
This, right. And like, what would be the limiting principle here?
The limiting principle here is the law that we already have over what is a reasonably raised contention. What is reasonably raised? And I think that in this case, where you obtain a medical opinion 41151 that explicitly says, actually, this is secondary to his PTSD, which is already service connected, that is reasonably raised. And I believe the court, either on de novo or clear error review, can look at this evidence and say, okay, in this particular case, under these facts, this is a reasonably raised theory of entitlement that the board should have addressed.
Okay, because, right, reasonably raised can deal with TDIU, right? And TDIU has, you know, a special relationship with the claim. It can be alternate theories for service connection. I mean, it can be, I mean, you know, Bailey, you know, something like a complication or something, right? That's part of a right regulation. I mean, these are different claims.
I don't think that they are. I think they are different theories of entitlement. And while I agree that maybe for the first 11 years of this claim, VA had absolutely no duty to look into PTSD as a cause of these conditions rather than treatment, once the evidence developed and the appellant raised it that, no, actually, they're saying that this is because of cocaine and the cocaine is part of his PTSD condition, I don't think that VA could ignore that. I don't think that this is that different than expanding an increased rating claim to include TDIU. A lot of claims that VA develops could, you know, have, there are so many different ways to develop a claim, so many different theories of entitlement. TDIU is very, very different than an increased rating claim. It is an individualized assessment, whereas increased ratings is more an objective assessment of the disability. And in Comer, the court didn't, the Federal Circuit said it doesn't matter that these are different types of claims requiring different development. Part of sympathetic construal is looking at it from the veteran's perspective. I don't think that if this veteran understood medical science and understand the etiology of his own conditions, he would have filed secondary to PTSD. He was service connected for PTSD from February 2011. He could have filed under a theory, but he's not competent. He doesn't know what causes what.
Right. But that gets back to the pleadings. I mean, that was the fundamental insight of all the pleading stuff, which is you don't have to successfully diagnose yourself in the pleading.
No.
But that's pleading construction. As opposed to just the scope of, you know, if I plead claim A as discreet as possible, the question then is, okay, what are VA's duties as the evidence develops? Whereas if I give a long narrative, then the question is, okay, what have you pleaded, right? These are two fundamentally different sort of questions. I've kept you a while on this line.
That's okay.
Yeah. No questions? Okay.
Anyway, may I respond to what you're saying? Or?
Yeah, please. And you've got time for rebuttal. So, I mean,
I'll be very quick. I'll just say that I think VA's duties are really the same as they've always been. As the claim develops, they need to be a non-adversarial, adjudicator that when there is the evidence that shows that they can grant the benefit the veteran wants, even if it's under a different theory of entitlement, when that evidence stares them in the face, like the May 2022 VA medical opinion, that didn't require more development. It just required them to be cognizant, we have enough evidence here now to grant this claim on a secondary basis. I don't think that imposed a burden.
Okay, thank you. Counsel.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. The court asked the parties to discuss whether the court's holding in Anderson v. Principi that there is a legal distinction between filing a claim for service connection for a disability pursuant to 1110 and a claim for compensation derived from a grant of compensation pursuant to 1151, whether this impacts this appeal. Your Honors, indeed, Anderson does impact this appeal. Specifically, the court explained in Anderson that a claimant may have two separate claims for the same condition. One under 1110, one under 1151. But they are separate and distinct claims for benefits based on separate legal bases.
So what do you say about, I asked earlier, so can 1151 claim give birth to secondary service-connected claims?
I don't see, Your Honor, how that necessarily could. That sounds like the problem in Anderson itself, where the claimant... He characterized in his pleadings a newly raised claim for depression as a claim for secondary service connection from his service-connected impotence pursuant to Section 1151. And the court explained that characterization was incorrect. It would not be, properly speaking, a claim for service connection. So, no, Your Honor, I believe that was answered in Anderson as well. There, they would be separate and distinct claims.
You can bring two separate and distinct claims in the same claim document, though, right?
Precisely what happened in Bonds, Your Honor, yes. So a pleading itself could say, I want service connection for this disability, and I want to file an 1151 claim for that same disability, Your Honor. Yes, that is possible.
But do you concede that this service connection claim was raised here?
No, Your Honor. Looking at, I'll also speak to the concurring opinion you wrote in Bonds, Your Honor, Judge Toth. No, because we would, as a preliminary matter, start by looking at the pleading itself and any documents referenced in that claim standing document. And as Bonds explains, we would look to see how many claims and what type of claims. So identifying the types of claims. And in Bonds, that was where there was that implied claim for service connection in addition to an 1151 claim. Once the claims themselves are identified, the number and type of claims, that's when cases like Clemens or Delisio or Grimes come into play. And we look at the scope of those identified claims. And that's where things like the duty to assist attach and different theories are reasonably raised by the record, as opposed to it's the difference between the scope of the pleading and the scope of the claim, Your Honor. And here in this appeal, appellant asserted that the veteran's 1151 claims encompassed claims for service connection, that claims for service connection were within the scope of the 1151 claims, or that the board was at least required to address this.
What do you say? I mean, counsel's made a pretty compelling case that, I mean, the 1151 claims, I mean, even pleaded separately, sort of park themselves. Like, once you're, there are other pending claims, and the 1151 seems to kind of occupy, like, right in the middle territory of all of these claims that they should have just, it's pretty obvious that these things are related in just a general sense that this would be swept up in the general duty to assist a claim and maximize benefits and all that.
Well, Your Honor, 1151 claims are very distinct. There's different statutes, different elements to the claims, different developments, different duties to assist, different types of medical opinions, for an 1151 claim versus a claim for service connection. And in this in particular case, appellant had already filed and had an 1110 claim adjudicated for his aortic aneurysm. And it was only after that was decided that he said, I would like to file an 1151 claim. And looking specifically at that pleading itself, the claim stating document, he invoked 1151 by name. I wish to file an 1151 claim against the VAMC. His statements made his intent clear. I should be compensated due to the hospital's negligence. My 1151 claim is the residuals from the bed sore and the botched stent placement. They did something wrong the second time I went in for a stent repair. The cover letter accompanying that filing likewise identified it as an 1151 claim. And this was after he was informed that his claim for service connection for aortic aneurysm was denied. He didn't appeal that. He didn't ask for reconsideration. He didn't argue any of those things in his brief either, Your Honor. He instead filed a new claim for benefits that runs on a parallel track for a separate and distinct benefit, 1151. And when looking at that claim stating document, VA correctly identified 1151 claims, not claims for service connection. They have different legal bases, different relevant facts, different development required for each claim. And treating 1110 and 1151 as separate claims was the veteran-friendly approach. A veteran can choose to file a claim for one, the other, both, and that's two separate claims for benefits for the same disability that can run on two parallel tracks. To say that they would be one and the same would go against the courts holding in Anderson, Burkhart, Hornick, and Alleman, and it would mean that any denial of service connection for a disability or any denial of 1151 for a disability would be a denial of both benefits. And that would be absurd results. If a claim for service connection is denied because there's no link to service, then a veteran could not later bring an 1151 claim for the same condition without new material evidence or new and relevant evidence, or at least in the AMA world, it would, because this was a legacy case in AMA, it could lead to a lot of confusion as to what was actually denied. So merging the two would not be a veteran-friendly result. But ultimately, because an 1151 claim cannot include a claim for service connection within its scope, there was no service connection claim raised here for the board to address. And just to make one final point about PTSD in 2004, Your Honors, PTSD is not on appeal before this court. The veteran did not appeal PTSD from the 2013 rating decision. The 2004 decision that denied PTSD service connection from 2004, appellant can ask the VRO to issue an SOC and pursue that claim to completion as a substitute claimant. But the argument about a reasonably raised claim for secondary service connection would be more appropriate in the context of an appeal for PTSD, which is not properly before the court.
Let me ask you a question about TDIU. In your brief, you concede that the board inadequately explained the denial of TDIU from February 2011, correct?
Correct.
And then in your recent pleading, you withdrew a portion of your argument that dealt with the after February 2011. Are you conceding TDIU after 2011, denial of TDIU after that date also, or?
The notice we filed, Your Honor, was to correct the statement in the briefs about the finality of the 2004 PTSD decision from the RO. VA does owe the veteran or appellant now a statement of the case, but
so the appeal on that is still pending technically.
Correct. It has not been perfected to the board yet, Your Honor. And appellant, as a substitute claimant, can raise TDIU in that context, but
PTSD is not before the court here today.
I might have reversed what I said there, though. Are you conceding the denial of TDIU before February 2011?
No, Your Honor. I apologize.
I might have said after, but.
Yeah, we do concede remand is warranted for TDIU from February 1st, 2011 due to reasons or bases. But we would continue to defend the period prior to February 1st, 2011 for TDIU. Appellant's primary argument was that because PTSD is still out there unadjudicated from 2004 to February 1st, 2011, it would somehow work its way into the court's decision today. But no, the board has not issued a decision on that 2004.
Not before us today.
Precisely, Your Honor, yes.
So Congress delegated to the Secretary a lot of discretion about how to do claims forms and how to process claims and all that. Why not have a separate claim form for 1151 if this is the Secretary's position that they really are fundamentally separate from service-connected claims? Why not just have a separate claim for them?
That is a good question, Your Honor. The 21526EZ can also be used for pensions. I'm not exactly sure why the agency didn't set out a separate form specifically for 1151 or for different types of benefits that could be claimed and heard at the RO in the first instance.
Okay.
Just want to walk through a little bit the facts here. So before the board made its decision, the veteran filed the 1151 claim. While that was pending, of course, the agency ordered exams that resulted in the medical opinions at issue here with respect to the secondary to PTSD. And then in March of 2022, this statement in support of a claim, in this case from Ms. Roberson, she noted that in response to the veteran's heart issue being related to use of cocaine, the veteran had been self-medicating for his PTSD before the heart conditions. So what's your position with respect to the duty to assist, the duty to maximize benefits as a result of that statement being available, and of course the record of evidence that the board would have had before it? We know that the board did not address this theory, but what's the best defense for having this evidence before the board and yet not addressing the issue of whether it raises a secondary service connection, given the language from the medical opinions?
Your Honor, it's because 1151 and 1110 claims are separate and distinct benefits, and they have separate elements. So
you're relying on Anderson precedent, and of course you're colleague across the aisle there disagrees with that, but
in part, Your Honor, but also because appellant is a substitute claimant, she couldn't raise claims for new benefits. And so a statement that he self-medicated his PTSD with cocaine and cocaine is bad for the heart isn't a theory of entitlement for 1151. It's a theory of entitlement for service connection, but she could not raise a service connection claim. It was an 1151 claim that is on appeal. I have two 1151 claims that are on appeal, Your Honor. So the board would not have to address statements that are irrelevant to the claimed benefit on appeal.
Okay. But the medical opinions that were proffered for the board came as a result of reviewing the medical record, et cetera. I mean, by this point, of course, the veteran had passed, unfortunately, but this is information that is in the record of evidence, evidence of record. So I'm just trying to figure out it. I mean, I think your argument is Anderson answers the question. These are separate and distinct, and you can't rely on the agency's duty to assist or to maximize benefits regardless, because this was an 1151 claim. There's no claim for service connection or secondary service connection. That's the argument, as I understand it.
Right, Your Honor. And yes, there was no claim for service connection.
Thank you.
Anything further?
No, if there are no further questions, Your Honors, we rest on our briefs in the notice of errata and respectfully request that the court affirm the board's decision that denied entitlement to the 1151 claims and the period of TDIU prior to February 1st, 2011, and remand the portion of the board's decision that denied entitlement to TDIU from February 1, 2011.
Thank you. Counsel?
I want to start by giving a hypothetical just to, respond to some of what the Secretary said about the impenetrable barrier between 1151 and 1110. A man who served in Vietnam during the presumptive period for herbicide exposure files an 1151 claim and for diabetes and says it's because of VA medical negligence. Does VA spend taxpayer money developing the 1151 claim, or do they grant presumptive service connection? I would argue that VA, who are the experts on these benefits, should grant service connection and not develop an 1151 claim solely because a veteran who's not even competent to know.
I mean, think about it. So, like, let's just say ordering a medical exam for this, right? You know, because one medical exam would be looking at whether, they'd be really focused on the medical negligence and the causality between the injury and some medical treatment. The other is looking at presumptive service exposure way back when. I mean, these are two very different practical examinations.
If you had a diagnosis of diabetes, you wouldn't, unless VA wanted to rebut the presumption, they wouldn't even need to get a medical examination. They could simply look at this person's service, see that he's diagnosed with diabetes, and grant the claim without any delay and without any further development. And I think that any veteran would want that, because veterans do not have the expertise in VA benefits. We talked about the informal claims regime, being done away with in March 2015, and part of the question there, when it was disputed by a veteran service organization, was, well, how much particularity are veterans going to have to use for these forms? And one of the things that the Federal Circuit said, which was, I think, mentioned in Bailey v. Wilkie as well, about 3.155D2, is that these rules were not intended to make the system very formalistic again. VA was supposed to be continuing in the spirit as the informal claims regime by sympathetically construing these claims and the scope of the pleadings.
Regulation on what constitutes a complete claim, and there's, it can get very complicated. What's an intent to file? Like, the communications now that go back and forth between VA are kind of governed by, like, there's lots of law on it. But I want to ask you, because to me this is a really important point, which is, if I understood what you said correctly, which is right now in practice, what's happening is 1151 claims are giving birth to downstream secondary service connection claims. And that's actually happening, in which case we wouldn't be really, like, a precedence, just we would just be recognizing an already existing fact. The Secretary says that's not happening. I want to ask, because I'm looking at 1151 and it says that, that compensations of Section A shall be awarded for a qualifying additional disability, right? And I vague memory of a case where it kind of went through the kind of causal chain of various disabilities and whether they were all under 1151 as qualifying additional disabilities, or what you're saying is maybe they're actually 1110 and 1151 disabilities grouped together. And
I think the way that VA processes a secondary claim from an 1151 grant is just to develop it the same way you would develop secondary service connection. Was it caused or aggravated? But I don't have expertise. If you would like us to do some, if you'd like me to do some supplemental briefing and do a little more research into that question.
It's important because, this stuff, again, it gets very technical in the sense that a lot of the case law developed under the informal claims regime, where a lot of these regulations on how to file a claim and what might be in a claim didn't exist in their current forms, let's say. And they're really organized around the central theme of how to read language from a veteran sympathetically. And those still hold in the sense of how you actually read language and pleading statements. And then, you know, when they attach, you know, materials. But then 3.155D2, like it literally begins with once VA receives a complete claim, which is 3.160 is complete. Okay, now this is about VA's duties. It doesn't matter if it's perfectly described or generally described. And what is the scope of every claim that VA receives? And what your argument would be that anytime there's language that would suggest that an 1151 claim, or if they get an 1151 claim, any language that would suggest a service-connected claim within that should also be processed as part of that claim.
My contention is that the claim is the request for the compensation of benefits. Veterans do not understand statutes. They know that they can get compensation if there was VA medical negligence or unforeseeable outcome. You know, yeah,
but
they
this,
know.
Like in this case, and I'm sorry to push back, but you've said, I mean, you've conceded there's nothing in the pleading language.
No, not
a service-connected claim.
There's nothing in the pleading language, but the claim is the claim for benefits, and 1151 versus 1110 are theories of entitlement.
Different benefits.
No, the same benefits. He wants the heart and ulcer condition benefits.
He wants money, and he wants money under two different claims. One is service connection, and the other is 1151.
I don't think that they're two different claims.
So,
I think that it is one claim with different theories of entitlement. No more than when you ask for direct service connection,
Anderson granted, says different.
Yeah, I understand that, and I think that Anderson is not how the law has now developed in terms of how we view what a claimant is asking for. The claimant is asking for the benefits, and there are theories of entitlement as a means to get to the benefit. I want to bring up something that my colleague brought up.
We'll give you all the time. I mean, as long as we're answering questions,
of course.
Going. But I'm just trying to sort of visualize how this plays out. So, let's say someone's in development, adjudicator's developing a claim, and they see they're doing an 1151 claim, and they see evidence that might be service connection. Would they order an examination for that? Could they go ahead and adjudicate it and just say, well, I mean, what happens if they start like, okay, I'm going to deny that, because that seems to be here too.
I think you would need to provide some notice to the veteran of the way the claim is being developed, just so that the veteran himself or herself would have the opportunity to respond and support, how the claim is being developed. I think, you know,
where's that in a regulation? Our case law can't be the governing source for all these procedures.
I mean, I would say the 3.155D2 is a regulation that, you know, speaks to VA developing a claim beyond, you know, what is in the claim stating document. I think also, since we're talking about the legacy system, the SOC speaks to, you know, you can't grant or deny a claim in an SOC, but you certainly can develop different theories of entitlement through using the SOC, and that would provide some level of notice to the veteran. But I think that so long as the veteran has the opportunity to participate in developing the claim, if someone is adjudicating an 1151 claim, and while doing it, they realize, actually, I see some, you know, merit to a direct service connection claim. I think I want to develop this and send it to a VA examiner. That's not something that I think any veteran would object to. I think that is part of what VA's duty to assist and as a non-adversarial adjudicator, is supposed to do. What happened, I believe, in Delisio was the court said sometimes there might be a really good theory of entitlement that the veteran himself doesn't recognize because he doesn't have the legal expertise and he doesn't have the medical expertise. So I think that to say that because he pled the claim 1151, that should bar any duty VA has to look at what was generated and, you know, say, oh, wow, this actually supports secondary service connection. I think that's holding veterans to a standard that is too high in this type of a non-adversarial system. Veterans do not appreciate the different statutes. They understand that there are different ways to get benefits. They know there's presumptive, direct, secondary, but I don't think that they're thinking the 1151 is in an entirely different planet. So I just, if I could move a little.
Sorry, we've taken over. So keep going.
Okay, I just want to talk a little bit about the 3.1010 F2. I would note that it says that that you can't add an issue or expand the claim, but it does say you may raise new theories of entitlement in support of the claim. Now, I believe, and I'll say I went through the regulations pretty closely, the word claim and the word issue are used rather interchangeably, so maybe we can agree on that or not. But I believe that if you look at 3.1P, a claim is request for compensation for benefits for a medical condition. That is what a claim is, and everything beyond that is a theory of entitlement. And VA does not have to investigate every possible way to service connect someone. They have the responsibility to support their claim. Under Skozin, the Federal Circuit said a veteran cannot just say, give me heart benefits and sit back and do nothing. They have to try to find a theory. They have to try to support their claim. That is their responsibility. But when VA is developing the claim under the veteran's theory, and then evidence comes up that actually shows there's another path to giving him this benefit, VA, as a non-adversarial, you know, adjudicator, must realize, okay, actually, we can give him what he wants this way. And he doesn't realize it, but we know it because we're the experts. We're meant to help. We're meant to grant every benefit that can be supported in law while protecting the interests of the government. And in this case, it's not really, I mean, obviously, I think that this needs some fact-finding from the board, which is why a remand would be appropriate. But the evidence is pretty clear that the VA medical examiner is saying this is actually secondary to his PTSD. And I don't think that it supports the interest of the government to not recognize what was already in front of it. Instead, you know, like Comer said, it's not meant to be a minefield. A veteran should not have to be an expert in causality of their own conditions or in 1151 versus 1110. They want compensation for their medical condition. And if, in fact, that medical condition is a result of their service, then that is something that I don't think that VA should be able to ignore. Now, I wanted to make one other point and then, well, a couple other points, and then I'll be done.
You're speaking quickly.
Yes. Okay, very quickly. First of all, I don't think that it would hurt a veteran. There was the question of, oh, well, if you include everything and then you deny it, now he has a final denial. Well, new and relevant evidence says under 3.2501 that a new theory of entitlement is always going to be new and relevant evidence. So I don't really think that it's going to hurt veterans. I think it will help veterans. I would also say that in this case, just comparing to the facts and bonds, I think VA's duty in bonds was actually a lot harder. There, all you had was a claim where the medical records show that his diabetes had onset within a year of service. It was not nearly as clear as a VA medical opinion saying this condition he claimed is a result of his PTSD. I think that actually VA had to work harder in bonds to discern that informal claim. And also I would mention Ingram. I think Ingram is really important because in that case, the veteran was claiming a non-service connected pension, and the court found that it could be construed as an 1151 claim. And a non-service connected pension and 1151 are very different too. So I think that Ingram would support that, you know, Anderson maybe is not the law the way we should understand it today after 22 years. Okay, if there are no more questions, I'll rest on that.
Okay, thank you. Answered a lot of
thank
questions.
You. Please.
We'll take the case under consideration.
All right.